Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started. Open up the committee, Senate Committee on Judiciary. We have two bills that are scheduled for public hearing and possible work session. Understand that on the second of those two, 2662, we'll be taking testimony, but we're waiting for conflict amendments, so we will not be able to move that bill. And then we do have a work session scheduled, and we just got hot off the press. Thank all the paperwork we need for that. So why don't we go ahead and open up the first of the public hearings, which is on House Bill 2014A.
Chair Brzozinski, members of the committee, House Bill 2014A would add registered nurses alongside physicians, interns, and residents as mandatory reporters of certain kinds of abuse. They would be required to report these injuries to law enforcement agencies.
All right. Thank you very much. And we have Jack Dempsey and Heidi Linder.
Thank you, Chair Brzozinski, members of the committee. Jack Dempsey, excuse me, with the Oregon Nurses Association, bringing House Bill 2014 from the House on a 60-0 vote. As Mr. Knott explained, this adds registered nurses to the statute of mandatory reporters of assault with a weapon and provides them the liability protections. There is a certification and training for SANE trained nurses. These are sexual assault nurse examiners, and Ms. Lettner will explain to you a little bit about what they do and why this is relevant. But the bottom line to this is that they spend more time with these patients than any other healthcare provider and are not covered by this, by these protections. So I feel like this is a very simple change to add them into that. I'll turn it over to Ms. Lettner, and you can kind of explain why this is relevant and why we need this. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Heidi Linder, and I'm a registered nurse. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify this morning. And I'm here to testify on behalf of the Oregon Nurses Association in support of House Bill 2014A, which would add RNs to the assault with a weapon statute as mandatory reporters and provide liability protections, as is already current law for physician interns and residents. I'm a sexual assault nurse examiner, which you may hear referred to as a SANE nurse, and I've been doing this since 2004. I have a Bachelor of Science of Nursing, and I'm a current emergency room nurse. Sexual assault examinations include documenting a victim's report of the event, careful physical examination, collection of evidence, which can include taking photographs, and we also, if it goes to court, testify as well in court. It's not at all unusual for a sexual assault nurse examiner to spend 4 or more hours with each sexual assault patient to adequately assess and document the event. SANE nurses spend more time with these victims than any other medical professional. Physicians will do a medical screening exam, and we make sure that there are no other injuries, but we spend a lion's share of the time with these patients. Current law requires physicians, residents, and interns to report to the medical examiner when they have a patient they have reasonable cause to believe has been injured by a weapon or has serious physical injury that is not the result of an accident. As mandatory reporters, physicians, residents, and interns are protected from liability. Sexual assault nurse examiners who spend the most time with these patients do not have the same protections and are not currently mandatory reporters under this statute. By reporting against a patient's wishes, I could become liable under the law for breaking a confidentiality, and also HIPAA could become an issue. And the report would have been done in good faith and not as a punitive act against the patient, but because of a crime against the patient. Thank you for your time and consideration in this important legislation.
All right. Thank you for your testimony today. Is there any questions for Heidi or Mr. Dempsey? I was hoping Jack would get one, but I guess not.
Maybe next time.
All right. Well, thank you all very much. Is there anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 2014A? Not seeing anyone, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2014A and go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2014A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2014A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2014A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And would anyone want to volunteer for this one?
I'll do it.
Okay, your choice. Senator Cruz will be our carrier on House Bill 2014A. And we'll close the work session on that bill. We'll open up our second public hearing on House Bill 2662A.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2662A amends ORS 181740 to allow state agencies to begin complying with reporting requirements and extends Program for Psychiatric Security Review Board relief hearings from January 2, 2012 to January 2, 2016. As the Chair indicated at the opening of today's meeting, there are conflict amendments pending, so we're not able to work on the bill today. A little background. In 2009, the Legislative Assembly passed House Bill 2853B, requiring the Department of Human Services, the Oregon Judicial Department, and the Psychiatric Security Review Board to provide information to the Oregon State Police identifying persons prohibited from possessing and or purchasing firearms due to specific court findings related to mental illness in order to comply with federal law. PSRB is also required to conduct relief hearings at the request of persons subject to such provisions who are seeking relief. As written, both the relief hearings relief hearing programs and compliance with reporting requirements are contingent on funding and rulemaking. This bill, 2662A, permits immediate compliance with the reporting requirements and extends the relief program 4 more years.
All right. I have two individuals that have signed up to give testimony today, David Yandell and Kevin Sterick. Want both of you gentlemen come up. Is there anyone else who needs or would like to be giving testimony today on this bill?
Chair Przanski and members of the committee, good morning. For the record, my name is David Yandell. I'm the director of the Criminal Justice Information Services Division for the Oregon State Police. As the committee administrator stated, last legislative session, the legislature entertained House Bill 2853, which was requested specifically to bring the state of Oregon into compliance with federal law. Specifically, the focus has been on getting state-level mental health records of those individuals who have been adjudicated as being prohibited from purchasing or possessing a firearm for mental health purposes into the national database, which is maintained by the FBI. That's the National Instant Check System. The state of Oregon currently has one or two records in NICS, the national system, but we've identified since the 2009 legislative session that we have approximately 68,000 records of individuals whose information needs to be transmitted to the FBI, and that work is presently underway. Without extending the sunset that was placed in 2853 last legislative session, that work essentially ends before it begins, because we are literally within weeks of being able to transmit the first batch of data to the FBI. But because of the language that we deliberately put into the bill last session to give us the opportunity to report back to the Legislative Assembly the work that we are doing, both to stand up the gun relief program at the PSRB and also the cooperative effort between the Oregon Health Authority, the state courts, and the state police to get those records to the FBI without extending the sunset, as I said earlier, that work ends before it really begins.
Thank you. Kevin, why don't you go next?
For the record, Chairman Przanski, members of the committee, Kevin Starr of the Oregon Firearms Federation. And what I wanted to bring to your attention today, since you are addressing, again, the PSRB, this bill, as you know, was enacted in the last session, and we opposed it. And what has happened now, which I think you should be aware of, is that PSRB has created a process for people to seek relief that is so onerous, expensive, and humiliating that, to my knowledge, only one person has attempted it, and he's given up. And the ironic part is that this person had already had his rights restored by the court, was able to purchase firearms, and became a competitive shooter. And then as a result of these mental health records being shared with the feds, he suddenly was no longer allowed. We don't even know now if he's permitted legally to own the guns he has. The other issue that I think bears some attention is that PSRB has been given a fairly significant amount of money to conduct these restorations. The last numbers I saw were somewhere around $175,000 a year, although I'm sure their staff could correct me. And so my concern is that with that amount of funding and a process that no one is apparently can navigate, I have to wonder about where that money is actually going. I have given you a copy of the requirements to get your rights restored and a copy of an email from the one person who I know of who's attempted it, who, as I said, had already had his rights restored and now no longer has them. And I think you can see by the tone of his email just how frustrating and expensive this process can be. He was told he needed to get an independent psychiatric evaluation, which he told me would cost about $5,000, but couldn't find a psychiatrist willing to do it because none were willing to help get him his gun rights restored. So as you look at the regulations concerning PSRB, I hope you'll look into some of the things that are going on as far as whether or not people even have a legitimate process for restoration.
Thank you. Questions?
Senator Cruz, did you have something? Yeah, I found this confusing because we're eliminating a whole lot of stuff out of the ORSs, and then it makes reference to Oregon law, and I went to those books and got even more confused. So, I mean, all the stuff that's being eliminated, number one says, you can do this, but not until you have the money, that sort of stuff. So can you connect the dots for me?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Cruz, absolutely. Last legislative session, one of the concerns that the legislature understandably had was how are we going to fund the gun relief program and how are we going to fund all of the work that the agencies are saying needs to be done. The federal government created a grant program for the states. It's called the NICS Act Record Improvement Program. They allocated $10 million nationwide for 2009 and $20 million for 2010 and have reduced that somewhat because of the federal deficit for 11, but it's about $16.4 million. The state of Oregon was one of only three states that qualified because of the legislative effort in the 09 session to receive funding out of the 09 grant. We received funding in addition to the states of Nevada and New York, but we specifically crafted language in the legislation that would prevent the state police from transmitting records to the FBI, which could presumably result in an individual saying, State of Oregon, we'd like to have a gun relief hearing, if we didn't receive funding, on the other hand, to stand up the gun relief program. We attempted in our initial application to fund 100% of the gun relief program's creation. Unfortunately, the feds would not allow 100%. There's language within the federal requirements that say that no less than 3% and no more than 10% of the grant award can be allocated to the maintenance of a gun relief program. We therefore had to come to the special session in January of last year. The legislature allocated a sufficient general fund to the PSRB to stand up the program. But the language that I believe that you're looking at is the language that essentially locksteps it. It says that the state courts, for instance, the Oregon Health Authority, cannot send the information until the PSRB says we've gotten funding for our program. And each of us were bound to those same requirements. And the way the language read, it also attached to it, says, or the latter of, and it's the sunset of January 2012. So right now, even though we're ready to go, and we're in the process of doing what the law requires us to do in stating that we do have adequate funding, without kicking that sunset out, we can't move forward with the program. I hope that helps.
Okay. I guess my other question having to do with the Department of Human Services or Oregon Health Authority, whichever you want to talk about, my assumption is that we're only dealing with people whose mental health records are available because of adjudication. And so how does OHA come into play in that?
Chair Prozanski, Senator Cruz, the three agencies that I mentioned are the state agencies that hold records of those individuals who have been adjudicated for mental health purposes as being prohibited from purchasing or possessing a firearm. Mr. Mike Morris from the Oregon Health Authority is in attendance here, may be able to more specifically answer your question, as is Mary Claire Buckley, Executive Director from the PSRB, and Juliet Follinsby, the Gun Relief Program Manager. So be happy to try to answer your question.
Okay. I'd like that, Ms. Chair, because, I mean, we've been dealing with the mental health issues.
Why don't we finish first? Let's take all the questions here for either, then we'll bring up other people. Any other questions? All right. Just for the record, Mr. Yandell, my understanding, and based on the questions that Senator Cruz has put forward, this is really to, one, by extending the sunset will allow the continuation of the program that we've been, let's say, involved in for 2 years. And now we're at the point where we, and the dots that we needed to have tied together, what I think I heard was that we would not be moving forward unless the funding was actually put in place, that meaning coming from the feds, and that we had whatever, I hate to use the word match, but whatever supplemental state money was in place. And if we didn't do that, then you and the agencies that were gathering or have this information that were supposed to provide it to the state police had to kind of wait on hold until you had all that funding in place so we actually had the ability to carry it out without, let's say, doing the work without having the funding.
Chair Prozanski, that's absolutely correct. And we welcome the directive to bring back to you what we have experienced with respect to the record collection and the gun relief program itself.
Okay. Any other questions based on it? Senator Bonamici?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if either of you, maybe Kevin, because you gave us this letter from someone, could explain the relationship between whatever procedure this person went through, the person who wrote this email, where he said that this had been resolved by a judge. So what's the relationship between whatever process he went through which he feels like he had a resolution through the judge versus the process that's outlined through the PSRB?
Chair Prozanski, Senator Bonamici, I'll share with you what I know because he came to me. He had his rights civilly restored by a judge in 2009. The confusion I'm having is because Mr. Yandell has, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but my understanding is that the state police are saying that the records have not yet been transmitted to the feds, yet this person got his rights restored, was able to purchase guns, became a reloader, a competitive shooter, and then one day he went to the store and he was denied, and he was informed that he was denied because of a mental health commitment he had when he was quite young, which was a result of drug use. He approached PSRB, and if you can see one of the exhibits I gave you, part of the process he was requested to take part in, one of the problems he had was many of the records they were demanding were simply unavailable to him. He's a very intelligent, successful, married guy with grown children. He certainly should have his rights restored and believed he had. Suddenly he finds out he hasn't. He then goes to PSRB and they start explaining the process to him, and after spending a great deal of money and a great deal of time, is now completely exasperated and doesn't think he can continue. Why he was required to do this after civil rights restoration, I don't understand.
Can I ask a follow-up?
You may.
So I'm just trying to figure out what type of proceeding that was. You said he went before the judge and he had his rights restored.
I may be able to email you the actual...
I'm just curious about what was the proceeding that did that and the relationship of that between the PSRB.
I don't know what the name of the legal proceeding would be. He appeared before a judge. He made a case that he should have his rights restored. They were. And then as a result of the national check system having his name in a database of people who had been civilly committed, he was denied by the feds through the state police.
Understood. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Yandell.
Chair Prozanski, I believe that Mary Claire Buckley is prepared to address Senator Bonamici's question.
All right. Well, we'll bring her up in a minute. I just want to make sure we get through this. So, Kevin, just from my understanding, when this individual went to the store, was he purchasing or attempting to purchase a new firearm?
Yes.
Okay.
After successfully having done it.
Yeah, I got that. I just want to make sure the record sets as to what he was trying to do and what he was denied against. I mean, it seems from our perspective to be somewhat speculating, but it sounds like once some records went into the federal system, which is one of the databases that is looked at basically a kickback. And the question really, I think, comes back to what Senator Bonamici said. I'm wondering if that is actually controlling over what the court had done, and this is the relief, how they should have maybe been mitigated out or how they compare, because it may have been certain things just weren't on the records.
My understanding is that as a result of the law we passed, anyone who had a mental health an involuntary commitment was required to go through this process. So had we not passed this law, his rights having been restored by a court, that would have been sufficient. And the ATF apparently no longer recognizes that.
I'm going to disagree with that summary, because it seems to me what this is just basically reporting to put stuff into a database. I don't believe the law itself kept someone from being able to seek that information. This is data collection to put into the database where, from my understanding, because I've talked to the state police on this particular issue, is basically gathering documents that are out there that should be part of this whole database process when someone is being considered for to purchase a firearm. And my question really is that, did the court at the time that they made the decision to give the relief actually have this other information in place as to, you know, let's say it's mental health history? Because it would seem to me that if they had all that in place and the court restored his rights, that it would seem like that would be a done deal.
Well, Chair Przanski, if I understand your question correctly, are you asking whether the courts were aware of his mental health history?
I think that is a question that needs to be, I mean, I would consider, because it, if the court restores the rights, then I guess the question is, maybe do the feds have some means of preempting from the federal level into the state? So those are some questions we're going to see if we can get some more information.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just clarify, because what my question is, obviously this person was under the understanding when he got that, whatever you're calling the relief from the court in 2009, that he didn't have to get further relief somewhere else. So somehow or another, he even says that it was the intent of the judge to give me relief at both the state and federal level. So I just want to make sure that I don't understand where the tension comes from. But
well, I believe the only reason he was in court, the only reason his rights had been taken away was because of his mental health commitment. So the court had to know that was the reason they needed to restore them.
Okay.
Understood.
Why don't we go ahead and let y'all step back, and then Mary Claire Buckley and Mike, Morris. So if you could identify yourself for the record, you've heard some of the dialogue we've had here. If you want to respond to that, that'd be great. If you would like to have questions posed to you to respond to, we can do that.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Claire Buckley, and I'm the Executive Director of the Psychiatric Security Review Board, which is the agency that has been given a responsibility for conducting what are called gun relief hearings as a result of that Senate Bill, House Bill 2853. With regards to your question, Senator Bonamici, I'm well familiar with this particular instance. To explain what happened was, prior to the enactment of 2853, persons with a mental health determination of solely a civil commitment had the right to ask a judge to restore their gun rights, okay, their right to own or possess a gun. People who had been found guilty except for insanity, or who had been found unable to aid and assist, did not have that right. That right has been expanded under 2853 to allow all three of those mental health determinations. But as a result, in my understanding of the situation this gentleman finds himself in, is that that statute was in effect when he went to Oregon State Court and asked for his rights to be restored as a result of a previous civil commitment. However, and so under state law, as Senator Przanski indicated, there is this conflict, because under state law he received or was granted that relief. However, at the time of the federal legislation, there is a basically this window that exists between the time of the passing of that federal legislation in January of 2008 And when the PSRB was certified as Oregon's gun relief program in August of 2009, such that anybody who received relief during that window of time was granted under the state law, but under federal law has not been granted under federal law their right to own or possess a gun. So that's that window, basically, of anybody who received relief from a state court under Oregon law would be okay, but under federal law, because the federal law is much more restrictive in terms of who can receive their gun rights back.
Let me follow up on that. Based on what you've said, I understand the window and how this catch-22 mm-hmm. occurs. It seems that now that PSRB has been given this designation, in the future that would not be happening because you'd be running a check that would be state plus the federal legislation that is, I'm going to say, preempting or has a control as to whether or not someone gets their rights back on the federal side, which would prohibit them from being able to purchase. Is that a fair summary?
Chair Brzezinski, I believe that as of August 9th, the PSRB is the only agency, the court system will not be providing judicial relief, so that eliminates, and the board would be following
okay.
the state.
Questions, gentlemen, ladies? Okay. Thank you very much for coming forward.
Chair Brzezinski, I will, Senator Bonamici, to follow up on this just briefly. This has been brought to to the board's attention, and the board is looking into whether we are going to make some kind of exception or take that into consideration. The board is going to meet and decide, because before knowing this ourselves, the board had a rulemaking process, which I understand Mr. Starrett has provided to you, and has set out the requirements for the board to in documents that the board wishes to have in order to conduct these hearings. And because, you know, the board is aware that the courts had already given them, they're looking into whether, in fact, they would grandfather those particular individuals. So we are aware of that.
Okay. This opens up another, what I'm going to call another issue, because what I thought I heard you say is because of the federal restrictions, that is why this gentleman was denied. Am I hearing you say now that we, the state, or the PSRB, has the ability to override the federal legislation?
No, I'm sorry, Chair Brzezinski, that is what I meant. But we could have a hearing and then give him the rights without requiring him to go through all those. His concern is that he can come back at any time and ask the board to restore his rights. But his concern is that he has to provide a psychological evaluation. In our rules, we have set out requirements in order to get that. And so if he were to come before the board now, he could certainly request from the board, and it would be fine. He would be fine under both federal and state law if he came before the board. What his issue is I've already got it, and I don't want to pay the money for a psych evaluation and for my prior records. So the board is considering whether to waive that psych evaluation requirement that they discussed was a financial burden on those particular individuals.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So we're talking about this one particular person. Now you said individual. So are there other people who are in this sort of
window?
Chair Brzezinski, Senator Bonamici, we have no idea how many, but I expect that there are others between January 1st, 2008 and August of 2009 that may well have received their, had their gun rights restored by a court in the state of Oregon.
Senator Cruz.
Several questions just popped up.
Go right ahead.
Okay. That being the case, it only comes to the surface if they attempt to purchase another gun, I'm assuming. So theoretically, they're in violation of the law by owning what they currently own, correct?
Senator Brzezinski, Senator Cruz, that's my understanding. Under federal law.
Under federal law. That would be interesting how you chase that tail. Another question. You said, so the PSRB is the ultimate arbiter at this point in time. There's no appeal beyond PSRB?
Chair Pruszynski, Senator Cruz, no, there is an appeal. There's a two-step process. The board holds a hearing. If the petitioner is not happy with the board's decision, they can appeal it to the circuit court of the county and then to the Court of Appeals. So we have provided due process rights in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, this would be standard as to administrative hearing, final order that's appealable.
Yes.
Okay. If I could.
Yeah.
Okay. So PSRB will have records on these individuals because, right?
The PSRB has the records on the individuals that have been found guilty except for insanity.
Right.
In Oregon.
In
right.
Oregon. Yep.
So you have that. So I guess one question would be, and at some point in time you have rendered a decision on these people and have released them. Okay, and then at some point they're wanting their gun rights back and you're requiring a complete new psych evaluation at that point in time when you have already made a determination as to their fitness to a degree. So I'm trying to figure out how...
Chair Pruszynski, Senator Cruz, what the rule requires is a current evaluation. I mean, the individuals that have solicited information and applications thus far, some of them had their civil commitments 20 years ago. So this is, and so the board in its rules wants a current psychological assessment to determine their current mental status for purposes of restoring gun rights. So that's why the requirement is there, because it could be, years and years could have passed since they lost their gun rights, either through any of those three determinations.
Yeah, I guess if it's been years and years and they've been model citizens, I'm wondering what the issue is. But I'll let that go for now. Okay, the nexus to OHA in all of this, please.
Chair Pruszynski and Senator Cruz, my name is Mike Morris, and I'm the manager for the Quality Improvement and Certification Unit with Addictions and Mental Health of Oregon Health Authority. And we do have our data systems that maintain civil commitment investigations as well as the outcomes of those investigations and court hearings. So we have the records for individuals who have been civilly committed. We also, because of our record keeping with the state hospital, we have the records of those who have been found unfit to proceed or unable to assist and been sent to the state hospital for restoration services. So
basically, I mean, this is another agency that just has data and we're just getting it all in one place.
I guess, Mr. Chair, my question was, I would assume that data, is that a different data set than PSRB has on those same people?
Chair Pruszynski, Senator Cruz, the board only has information on persons who are found guilty except for insanity. The OHA would have information on the other persons who have had a mental health determination, that is civil commitments and persons who have been found unable to aid and assist. And so each agency needs to take their information and give it to the state police, who collect it all and then are to enter it into the national data bank.
And Senator Cruz, the way I hear this is that if you have someone that's coming into the system and they think they're not fit to proceed, they go to the hospital. The hospital has those records. Mm-hmm. Let's say then they are determined to be fit to proceed. They go to trial, but they are found to be guilty except for insanity. Then PSRB is going to have those records on that individual based on that second determination of guilt, but or except for. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you could actually have not a duplicate, but the same person entered into two different databases. And at the same time, you could have someone who was not fit to proceed and then be found innocent or not guilty, and PSRB would not have those records.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Anything else for these two? All right.
I'm confused about that.
All right. Thank you all very much. And I'll ask once again, is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on House Bill 2662A? Not seeing anyone. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on 2662A. As I stated at the beginning of the hearing, my understanding there is conflict amendments that we're waiting for, And so that bill will be rescheduled in the near future. So with that, we have our last task for today, and that is our work session. I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on House Bill 3125A.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 3125A was previously heard on May 12th, and there was an amendment in between now and then, or we had just recently received an amendment. It's the dash A3. It modifies, adds some detail to the attestation language, and it comes from the sponsor of the measure, which was Representative Witt, that we heard from on May 12th. There's no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact as to the dash A3 amendment. This is the measure that requires each application for issuance of licenses, tags, and permit to hunt with firearms to include statements attesting that applicants have not been convicted or found guilty, but for insanity of a felony.
Okay, and just for this additional clarification, if y'all remember, committee members, we had Mr., I think it was John Huddle, who came up and gave some testimony with Representative Witt. My understanding in discussions with both of the gentlemen, the A3 is a result of those conversations, and that Representative Witt, the sponsor, is supportive and actually had the A3s drafted.
And Mr. Chair, members, if I may also add, Kurt Melcher, the director from DOW, is in this morning but had a meeting at 9 o'clock. They have no issue with the measure as amended by the dash A3s.
Okay. So the chair would entertain a motion on the dash A3s.
Okay, I'll make the motion. I move the dash three amendments to 3125A.
Senator Cruz moves the dash three amendments into House Bill 3125A. Discussions? Objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3125A as amended by the dash three amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3125A as amended by the dash three amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I will be opposing this bill. I think this is a step too far, in my opinion. There's nothing to be gained by this. It's just more government where government doesn't need to be.
I would be a no as well.
Okay. Any other comments? I guess from my perspective, looking at what I see here, it appears that just wanting the individual to attest whether they are or not a convicted felon, and whether or not they have been found guilty except for insanity, which is required as our state prohibition for those individuals. So I'm assuming at this point, is there any other objections to the motion?
No, Mr. Chair, I see it as a closing a loophole. As Representative Witt explained, that it just creates a problem in giving the impression that someone who should not have a gun under federal law is able to get a license. So I think it just closes a loophole and clarifies current law.
Sir, what's that?
Unrelated to my primary opposition, I already questioned the relating to clause on this. It has nothing to do with wildlife, it has to do with gun control.
Okay, fine. Any other questions or comments? I'm objecting to the motion to move the bill to the floor for the due pass recommendation as amended by the dash three, Senator Wissett and Senator Cruz. Anyone else is objecting? Not, the motion carries. Any volunteers?
No.
Chair will carry. This ass.
I had a feeling it was going to ask.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Senator Dingfelder, I'm getting ready to close, but council has brought my attention is that we did pass 2014A.
Yes. I would like to vote on that.
All right. Senator Dingfelder requests unanimous consent to reconsider the vote that we passed
House Bill 2014A for the purpose of casting a vote on that bill. Any objection?
Yeah, let me think about it for
a day or two. I'll let you think about it. Not okay. Having any objection, so ordered. Senator Dingfelder, how
I
would
vote
you vote?
Aye.
And Senator Dingfelder is, let's say, record is from excused to an aye.
Thank you.
All right, and we'll close that portion of the work session on 2014A. And I don't think we have anything else for the day. And so Monday we're set to be here, I'm assuming at 8:30, based on getting Christy to say yes and Pam. With that, we're adjourned until Monday at 8:30. Thank you.